We want to build a community and share other women's stories.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tea with Tea, She Who Leads podcast. Today, I have Mamta Rodriguez, and she is the Global Chief Client Officer at Teleperformance. Mamta, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Terry.
And today we're talking about authenticity, which I know is something that is very true to your journey, Mamta. So I would love to obviously step into that and discuss that in a little bit more detail. But in terms of you, it's always helpful for our listeners to get a sense of who you are. Do you mind just sharing a bit about your journey and what got you to where you are today?
Of course. Well, first of all, it's so exciting to meet everybody virtually. And I'm privileged to being here. I've been working for over 30 years. And my journey starts as just a simple Boston girl, moved to New York for grad school, to the Stern School, went to Boston University undergrad, NYU grad. And I've had the privilege of some amazing leaders along the way, which I know we're going to double click on. I am one of four kids, a mom of two today. My journey starts by always first also rooting myself in the foundation of being part of an immigrant family, and learning throughout the way. I learn from everyone who's, you know, everything from even my children and above. I learn across the board. And I think that's what makes life interesting is learning along the way. And so that's been a bit of my journey at from a personal and professional level. And I'm sure we'll double click on various facets of it along the way today.
Yes, and thank you so much. I didn't know you were one of four. We didn't touch upon that previously. Yeah. So you have quite a large family.
I do. So I'm the youngest. And I think, you know, sometimes people say, oh, that's what, that makes sense. I'm the youngest of three girls first, and then my brother. Okay. So I'm a middle child, but then also the baby in some ways. And I was born in India, raised in Boston, moved when I was around 3 years old.
Okay.
So, you know, I am, you know, for the any of those that are listening from the U.S., I am a Patriots fan. I am a Red Sox fan. If I don't say that, my brother will be very disappointed in me. And I married a New York guy. So we've got a mixed family who's, you know, Jets and Yankees. And
okay.
So we keep it real when it comes to sports. Big sports family.
Yeah, it must be interesting in your house on the weekends.
It is. It really is fun because, you know, and it's many different sports as well. So in my household, you know, American football or soccer, rugby, golf, basketball, cricket are all active sports, for lack of a better description, watched in my house.
Wow. And just from a business perspective, Mamta, let's talk a little bit about companies and where you've kind of grown up, because you've not always been at Teleperformance. Obviously, that's right. Been the last 5 years or so, right? But yeah. Prior to that, large corporates, I think, kind of shaped your leadership journey along the way. Obviously, you had Amex and MasterCard. Yeah. Do you want to just share a little bit about your career?
Absolutely. Thank you for that. So I started my financial services career journey with American Express after graduate school, and then have worked at Amex, MasterCard, Visa, Synchrony Financial, and now at TP. Prior to graduate school, I did work at Digital Equipment Corporation, which then got acquired by Compaq and then is now HP. And I started in finance there.
Okay.
And then I did a blip in investment banking as well. But I would say the lion's share of what's really morphed my career and my leadership has been through the Amex journey. And foundational was American Express for sure in their expectations of what defines a leader, whether I was an individual contributor at the time, right? Very junior, actually had a team pretty fast into my Amex career. And what that entailed was truly, you know, a 360. They did 360s back then, you know, of seeing who you were like with your team, with your peers and your superiors, so all around. And that was a large portion of what defined your performance review. And then, of course, how you had driven your specific KPIs as well. So I've grown up with that over, you know, my career of what makes a true leader and what enables growth from my early days at Amex.
Yeah, which actually sometimes you don't really think about the context of leadership unless you have kind of had this training ground. Some people are kind of thrown into it, right? And they don't necessarily have the background or the know-how to know how to get into it. And I think actually the 360 piece, as you say, even back then, it was something that they were doing, which for some businesses are only kind of going into that space now. So it's a different type of leadership for some, I think.
It's much more based on EQ and you know, and also being a servant leader, and also the defining of your success is not just yours, it's how you are with everyone around you. So it's a bit more of we rise together, we fall together, which isn't for everybody, right? Like some people, and not for every industry as well, right? So one would think that in banking or financial services, it's much more driven by, you know, specific KPIs, but rather as you grow in your career, it's about everything else. Table stakes, you have your job because of your KPIs. You have the leadership because of everything else. And that's a very clear demarcation that I learned early on in my career.
Yeah, so true. And I think actually sometimes it's hard to define that. I think it's good that you have got a bit of understanding as to the two and the difference that there is, not just being a leader, but obviously what that means for you and your role. Thank you for sharing that little bit around kind of American Express. Are there any other pivotal moments throughout your career that have shaped you as a leader today?
Oh, there's so many. I'm going to pick a couple. I'll pick a couple if that's okay. Okay. One was early on, probably it was in it, around the MasterCard time or Visa, around both. I had a very ambiguous role, right? So you were thinking about the background there is we were building out, the industry was saying, what is financial inclusion? How do we get to every individual, every citizen in the world and ensure that they have the power and the decisioning to make good financial decisions for themselves, but are we also giving them the tools and the capabilities to do that? And what was really pivotal for me was I was running at MasterCard, you know, financial inclusion and driving the product, the first product there for financial inclusion. So as, you know, many in the industry know, Ajay Banga, who was the CEO at the time and relatively new CEO when I was there, knew and he said to the organization, we're going to be number one. You know, Visa was number one in the US at the time. And he said, we're going to be number one everywhere else. That's where we're going to start. And to do that, we're going to drive the underbanked, unbanked segment. And we're also going to do that with partnerships with the government. And makes sense now, he's at the World Bank, and how we do it. And here I am in this, you know, serendipitous role driving government disbursements, unbanked, prepaid product, and delivering that. And so I'm pretty proud of myself, right? And in the role I have, a big book of business, it's a pretty awesome place to be. But anytime you're in a pretty awesome place, you also have to recognize and eat your humble pie.
Yes.
So I launched a product, very proud of myself, but I won't say where, but I launched a product in one of the emerging markets. And was, you know, wanted to pat ourselves in the back, and we threw it out there. Now, as we know, every credit card product is, you can't, you know, you need to have the usage of it. Well, even before chip, you need to swipe, you need to tap, you need to dip, wherever you were in the journey, right, of payments. Well, I put that product, fortunately, just as a pilot out there in a small town in this emerging market. And it was the citizens of that market were very proud of having their first card in wallet and laminated the card. So I never thought about financial education in that capacity at the time. And so here I am so proud of myself. We've launched this amazing product. We're going to show proof points outside of our own markets that we were good in. And one learns from mistakes. That was a complete failure because the product cannot be used if it's laminated. And never did it dawn
Oh
on
my
me,
gosh. Yeah.
right? So it's a pivotal moment in my career. Not, and fortunately, it was a pilot. Fortunately, we could learn from it. It's really important to put yourself in the other person's shoes. It's really important to build products and capabilities that first you really put yourself there. And while we've done focus groups, while we've done so much, all of it right, we didn't do the simple step of saying, what is transaction going to look like? What is the day-to-day person going to look like? And so I learned a lot. And in fact, learned not only for what's involved in my customer base, but also I always try to put myself in the other person's shoes as a leader. I learned on that as well. Like, what is their vantage point and what am I missing? And, you know, not that one can always catch that, but pausing and asking that question absolutely makes you a better person. So that's one
So
example.
true.
That's
So true.
probably one of the biggest ones that I have. And then the other one that's overarching my career generally is, you know, I've had pivotal points with really big leaders that have taken a bet on me throughout my career, right? So taking a bet on me, I had that at Amex with Steve Squeri. Taking a bet on me, I had that with leaders at MasterCard, including Ajay at MasterCard. Taking a bet on me at Visa with Bill Gaida, with Jim McCarthy, who were running with chief product officer and innovation officers. Taking a bet on me at Synchrony with Margaret Keane and leaders that said, you know what, we're going to give you critical experiences, very GE in that way, and grew me. And lastly, taking a bet on me here with Danielle and Miranda, who really said, you know what, we're going to create verticals and we want you. We don't know exactly what we are looking for, but we believe in the cause. And, you know, throughout that, value creation has been very important, where if I can drive value and I feel I can contribute, it's what's really led me to those decisions and those movements as well.
And you've done this quite a lot, right? You go in somewhere and there's no real path for you. It's kind of like, okay, I like that. I will take it and I'll see what I can do with it. And I know you've kind of touched upon this and that leads quite well into that. But where does that come from? Because I think some people really shy away from that and think, oh my gosh, and I don't know how I would respond. I kind of like to know what I'm going in to do. Whereas obviously it sounds like you're the opposite and it's more like, okay, this is what I can go and do. And the funnel is really large and there's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, and it started, you're absolutely right. I didn't even realize that I like that. So I remember post 9/11, I had briefly worked at an investment bank at Bear Stearns, and they let go of most of the class, like 9/11. And so here I am in New York, and like 2-3 months, four months out of grad school. And you know, I was in grad school during like the dot-com bubble. So I had so many offers, but everything changed. 9/11 came. And then I got three offers, two back in banking and one at NYU, back at NYU. So at the Stern School and with the dean, with the vice dean. And the job was, you know, to create, you know, connections and a network for New York, given 9/11, like, what can we do? How can we do it? What are we going to do to help the community? Okay, that was the genesis,
Wow.
the
Okay.
overall premise, I should say, of
Yeah.
the job. I asked the vice dean, I'll never forget this, asked Richie, so what exactly is my job? I mean, this was like, I'm in my 20s, right? Like, I'm young. What exactly is my job? And he's like, I don't know. I have no, he was a very blunt person. And he goes, I have no idea, but you're going to be your job to figure it out. Now, keep in mind, I had two other jobs that were very clear back in finance. I had this ambiguous job. And there were two reasons I took it. One, because I kind of liked the I don't know. And, you know, I remember realizing then that I was willing to take it. But the other big component was I wanted to, the other two jobs were not in New York. The one was in Connecticut, one was back in Boston. And I wanted to stay in New York because I had just met Roy, my husband today, and I personally wanted to get to know him more. So I also wanted, I've always put what's important to me and willing to take the risk and the balance of that. It doesn't always work out for everyone. And something, a role like that, a lot of people thought, like, why would you go into academia after an MBA? It was one of the best jobs that I had that helped me build 80 relationships around NYU, and we can get into that if we want to. One of them was Amex, Harvey Golub, who had, who said, you need to come work at Amex. And I said, I'm not ready yet, but when I am, I'll come there. So it led to that. And I left back a center that was I created. So, it's still there today, the Center for Strategic Initiatives at NYU. So it was phenomenal. And that told me that you can take something so ambiguous. And we were all taking risk post 9/11, right? We were in that, like, we've survived and, we're here. And we, so there was, we being the community at large, it definitely helped me realize, though, that one can take something that's ambiguous and create something that's so real and impactful. And that then just led to me being able to do that again and again.
Although I think that is a prime example of you being true to yourself. Right. If you think about it, you had the finance options, but they weren't taking you down the route that was personal and what actually meant something to you in terms of being with your husband, who wasn't obviously your husband at the time. So completely, who knows, but it was the risk that you wanted to take. So that for me just shows the authenticity piece has been there very early. The whole episode is about authenticity and what that means to you, and obviously the career that you've created off the back of it. And I think that's the prime example, but would love to just hear what authenticity means to you, Mamta, and then we can dive into that a lot more. And I love that this led to so many opportunities for you, because it sounds like it was not necessarily the calling per se, but obviously you stayed true to yourself, and obviously it still took you in a direction.
I think, to your point, that what authenticity means to me is being passionate of what you believe in, and there's no right or wrong answer to that. Staying honest, not only with yourself but with those around you, knowing, recognizing what's important to you. So for me, as an example, I've always wanted to be in a value creation role, and that can mean many things. Value creation at NYU was building the network. It wasn't a revenue line. It was really connecting with the community and creating opportunities for students. Value creation, once I got into financial services, was driven by, like, the traditional revenue driver, but had many times has had a lens on how you're building out a community, right? You're creating financial empowerment, you're doing that. And most importantly, authenticity is how you are with your team and those around you, and personally as well. When I, especially during COVID years, where even my children could hear me on work calls, they knew exactly what, they were in sc virtual school, I was at virtual work, right? And I was so proud of who I am, and because they can hear everything, right? Like, and what that represents, and to be that role model for the next generation, right? Because they're here, the Gen Zers, which is where my kids fall, the millennials, of course, already very present. And I think that being true to yourself then reflects in how you are with others as well. So that's my definition, very broad definition, but what defined me as being authentic.
Yes, thank you. And so true. And I think that passion piece is so important. Do you think the role at NYU is where you figured that this was the kind of guiding principle for you from a career perspective, or was it somewhere else where you realized this?
Authenticity. I honestly think even before that, when we, I mean, I think that authenticity is something you're, it's nature versus nurture. So there's something in nature that leads to some of the, personal experiences with where you are in life. So that's, but of course, I think where you're going is the nurture. And I think what really became paramount through my career was, and actually the switches that I made as well. I think one of the ones that really showed me that leaders, two of them, leaders were really thinking about me more than anything else, through the career, especially this one was at Visa, when I shared with my leader that I might be leaving. And I was very, very close to that leader, believed in, what all they'd done for product and innovation at Visa, case in point where they are even today. And he put me first, and that to me showed his leadership. And at first I'm like, wait, you're okay with me leaving? And, he's like, it's not about that. It's me being wanting to support you in what's right for you. And then when I came to Synchrony and I was a client to Visa because I moved to the bank side. He helped me with Visa and navigating things I needed for the bank. And I remember seeing an email, chain forwarded, and he's like, we've sent one of our own and we need to help her in what she needs. And to me, that has been like role models like that are so important in life. And just to know that people are looking out for you personally, and it's not like the business card you have, but the relationship you have. And examples of that have helped me for who I am. And I owe it to the next individual and individuals to reflect the same, because leaders like that have my loyalty for life, and they deserve it because they've earned it.
Yeah, it's one of the it's one of those things that either comes naturally to somebody or doesn't, I think. And I think some it's a bit like you say, the nature versus nurture, because for me, for anyone in my team, I would always think, okay, what's right for you next, and how do I help you get to that point, and how do I help kind of pay it forward, which I think not everybody always has. I guess maybe it's just not naturally something that you would think about.
And it's interesting, right? And then there's some industries, including some in financial services, that are very much about your individual results, right? And so sometimes people, even me, I mean, I think everybody in nature has a kindness spirit, but sometimes they get converted, for lack of a better description, to their environment and expectations that are there for them. But and how they define success. So for me, I define success with my team, with followership, with, feeling that power of we, and seeing that excitement in individuals when we win together. So like everything, I read this quote once, like when somebody gives you a gift, they're also selfishly wanting to give you a gift because it makes them happy. So this is a little bit of selfishness in me that it makes me happy when there's team. It's what gets me going. So it's not just me being altruistic, it's also me being me, and
And do you, has there been a time where you have had to compromise on that authenticity piece?
It's a really good question. I've had to, yes, I would be, I mean, life has times when things are difficult. I would be lying to you if I said otherwise. And there's been times, I remember one vividly, I was quite junior in my career, where I felt I needed to bite my tongue. I didn't necessarily have a voice that I do today to say something. I feel like that made me not feel my authentic self. I didn't like that feeling. And fortunately, I had a really good mentor who I could talk to about that. And she said to me, well, you learn from good and bad leadership. And so, and you can't always change the role, like the place you're in at the moment. But you can learn from it. And when you're in that position, ensure that that doesn't happen. And her feedback, her guidance to me was really helpful, because I mean, I was this youngin', like ready to, and I should always be like conquer the world. But there's times also of like saying, okay, I need to learn and use that. So I felt a bit compromised, but she empowered me in that. Her guidance was great. I didn't stay in that role for long, which was good for me, because I can't work for somebody that I don't respect ultimately. And so when the opportunity allowed itself, I was able to change roles. And you know, learn from that experience, but hope for that to not happen again.
Yeah, I think it's situational sometimes, right? And as you say, if you don't necessarily, if you're not in the position when you can speak up, I think it's hard and it does compromise us and compromises our values
Yeah,
ultimately, right?
for sure.
Thinking about your career, because I know there have been some parts that I'd love just to go into in a little bit more, and particularly thinking around when you moved to India and you had to take the sabbatical, and that was obviously a huge thing for you, very young children, like, well, one young child, one not born yet, right?
2 months. I moved with
Two
him
months,
for
okay, so very young
2 months.
children. And that
Yeah.
was a huge thing for you. And I know just kind of a bit of a shift, wasn't it, in terms of your career, but obviously led you on to great things. But would love just to hear about that, because I think not
Thanks.
everybody feels they can take that opportunity.
Yeah, no, that was definitely monumental time in my life because we were moving with my husband and I were moving. It was, you know, after the financial crisis of 08, and we were moving with a 2-month-old and shy of 2-year-old to India. And I was moving originally during my maternity leave at Amex, so with full intention to work at the time and then land in India. Now I shared with you I was born in India, but I'm a Boston girl, and so landing there I didn't even know where to get a carton of milk, to be honest, like really new for me and across the board and with 2 young kids. So I tried to work, I tried to make it work, and this was not on Amex at all, but things were hard. India was hard. And something had to give. And you know, and there is, you know, while there's never a work-life balance, the extremity of it in India was even more so. So it wasn't like I could rely on my husband, who was running an investment bank and really not around. And so because he was busy working, and so I looked at myself and said, I'm going to fail across the board. And that was a hard decision. But, you know, it came to me pretty quickly in my heart when I asked myself, am I okay feeling guilty every time I leave and feeling guilty every time I come back? Like I was feeling guilty, period. And I could see, even while I tried for a few months, that it was detrimental to how my kids were being raised. Now, people will say, oh, well, there's all this support in India. There is, but there isn't, especially when you are not from there and you don't have an infrastructure that also has like family and all these other things. So I decided to quit. I remember calling Amex and saying, and they were very flexible, like work from home. But back in the day, there wasn't even Wi-Fi. Like we're talking like the dial-up, you know. Really, he said, I'm not going to be effective, but I needed to be true to Amex as well, right? Like, I'm not going to be effective at home, and I'm not being effective as a mom, as myself, as me. And I just need time off, and I need to focus on figuring out India. It was the best decision, Terry, of my life because,
Good.
oh my God, I also realized I truly love that. So I can absolutely be, I have an ability to make myself so busy and show and still make an impact and have fun. So whether I work or I don't. And so it was a really good time with my kids, really good time for understanding and really understanding and appreciating India, which created that foundation of us later. And then stepping back in consulting roles more on my terms while I was there. With a more flexible schedule, and feeling better about me after the first few months.
Yeah, and just actually being true. I think you are. It sounds as though, obviously, kind of part of your sense of achievement and where your passion comes from, and that, and as you kind of say, the underlying passion for you is doing something well. And
Yes.
obviously, if you're in a position where you think, do you know what, something's being compromised here, and I'm not giving it 100%, that's also not you.
You're
And
right.
so, I think for you to kind of take that step back and say, actually, I'm going to do this on my terms and what feels right for me.
Yeah.
Amazing. And like you say, it's not often that you are put in that situation, and to have the opportunity that you did with your children. I know that it will have taught you many different things to what you will have learned at American Express.
Yeah, and you know, and to your point, I share that with, because I'm on the women's network here at TP and even previously at Synchrony, I share that openly because there's still a stigma a bit for men or women to take time off for whatever reason. I think it's changing over the years, but definitely my generation, and you know, for sure. And I did it, and I've openly always shared why, how, and it's never held me back in the sense of, and perhaps I didn't get a promotion I would have at some point back then. But I don't even know, because when MasterCard found me and they asked me what I was doing, they found me, and I said, well, I'm part-time, I'm doing some consulting, but this is my background. They're like, great, you know, and the rest is history. So I think it's really important to, I've found it really important to share that with, you know, other women and men, so that they know that, you know, making choices that are right for you at any given time in your journey, because it is a journey, right? Like, we give so much to work, and you know, we give our personal self to the work. Why should it not be that journey of and different facets of it as life progresses?
I actually, in the UK, we're very lucky because you can take up to 12 months off, actually kind of slightly longer if you think about vacation times. And when I was going off, I naturally just thought about my clients, and I was like, I'll be off for 6 months. Like, I'll be back after 6 months.
Yeah.
And then all of my family were like, why? Like, do you, work will be exactly the same when you go back. Just take the time.
Yes.
Because you don't get that back. And I'm so glad that I did. And every month I would kind of push it out for another month. And then in the end, I went, you know what? I'm just going to take the 12 months. I am just committing to it. And that's what I want to do. And I'm going to do it. And I came back to work, and it was honestly as though I'd gone off yesterday. It was like nothing could change. And you just think these things that you think are very big are actually not. And actually really are grateful for the time. I had the best 12 months, and I miss those times.
I miss those times back then. And so, because my kids will always, you know, as you'll see, as your kids get older, so tell me a story about me from back then. And when I reminisce, I'm like, wow, those were such good times. I mean, naturally, now I've got teenagers, so I miss their baby selves as well. So there's a little bit of that, that, you know, now, like, I compensate with my dog. But, you know, you miss those times. And to be able to have those stories, it's not about, oh, I did an Excel sheet, right? Or, oh, I did, you know, I made sure all my Outlook email was, what do you define as, like, the memories of any given chapter. And to, you know, that's what makes it, you know, fun and
so true.
Yeah.
And Mumsy, you and I connected because of our passion for female leadership, female community, female support in any capacity. And I love what you're doing at TP. And it sounds as though you've done this kind of throughout your career, but I think at TP you're really paying it forward. And so what are you, can you share that with us? And I'd love to obviously talk a bit about that if possible.
Yeah, absolutely. So TP Women is a women's network where we'll say every woman at TP is a member. Obviously those that are, some are more active than others, and TP's massive. It's 500,000 employees globally. So this is a massive organization, and the largest and oldest network that we have. And some ways that we're paying it forward, it's not just me, it's the community, is one, reflecting the tenets of our values. Everything that we're talking about here is the anchors of TP Women: be authentic, be bold, be gracious. So, you know, at the same time, be confident in what you, and ask for what you deserve, and have a voice, and leverage others to help you have a voice. So I think that's key to the tenants, and I'd say key to everything that reflects me, but reflects the network. And I think, and I know it's helped, because originally when I started, and even women on my team, they ping me on chat about something they wanted to say, but didn't say it in the room. And in fact, at Synchrony, I was very active in Women's Network, and we had a consultant come in that pointed something out that had stuck with me, where she said that many a times you're in a boardroom or any, meeting, but imagine that boardroom, and, Terry will say something and very phenomenal and it's not really caught. And then, Joe will say it basically again. And Terry's sitting there thinking like, yeah, and everybody's acknowledging it. I'm like, great, great idea, Joe. Well, it's really important for me, Mumtha, who's sitting in that same table, to say, love it. Love your idea, Joe, that you piggybacked off of from Terry. And let's see what we can do about it. And so when that consultant who pointed out the red house on the street, like that expression, highlighted to me that we as human nature do that, unbeknownst to me, sometimes I've been very purposeful in highlighting that in my life of what I can do. And I bring that into the Women's Network as well to enable that voice for the women to say, whether it's even a chat saying, you know what, Terry just pinged me about an idea that I really liked that she said. And you know what, instead of me stealing her thunder, Terry, do you want to take a minute and talk about it? And behind the scenes, I send that chat to you saying, I really like your idea. I'm about to call on you. So it's not like you're put on the spot either.
Yeah.
But it's such small acts of kindness that cost you nothing. It's but make you feel so much better in that situation. And I feel it's very circular because now people are doing it more and more. So that's, I find that's really key. There's a lot of initiatives that we have naturally around the organization, whether that's podcasts and amplifying various leaders internally and externally's voice and their personal story. There's many charitable events that we're sponsoring. There is and of course also efforts, basic efforts, like we're largely a call center companies at our DNA. We didn't have expecting mothers parking at the call centers. So things that, menopause on the other spectrum and wellness that we can do for women. So all of that in a very short nugget are things that we do in the network and truly create a place, a home for women and men, because it takes a conversation of both. And so we definitely have men leaders and mentors, especially those that we feel are doing right by the women on their teams. We invite them and saying, congratulations, you've earned a spot here, because the dialogue's really about men and women, right? Not just women with women.
Yes, agreed. And it's not, that's not the purpose of this conversation, right? It's not to say that it's one versus the other, it's one and the other, but it's also to amplify the voices in the room. Like you say, when sometimes Joe gets heard, but Terry doesn't, it's how do we help these people to speak up and to help also create a community where maybe people don't have the confidence without it. And I think sometimes you do need that person or the mentor on your shoulder to say, go for it, you can do it.
Right.
But there's not always that opportunity. Is that where this, is that where that came from for kind of building TP?
It did. Absolutely. That was the premise of it underlying as well, especially because it's not even Joe's fault. Is
no.
that there, right? And so, and unfortunately in the past, there was this channeling of negativity unbeknownst to Joe. And now when I have a boy and a girl, right, as a son and a daughter, I even see that in like nature versus nurture, like some it's so unbeknownst to them.
Yeah.
But yet even that negativity, that's, if we mitigate so much just by creating that transparency, because there's so many inadvertent actions that result in that scenario, which can be easily dissipated, if addressed.
Actually, could you share that story with the person on your team? And it was a male, and they said, I didn't think I was going, that you were going to hire me.
Right?
It was,
oh my goodness, that really shocked me. So this was a few years ago, I'm building up my team. And, when I'd left my former employer, obviously there was a period of time I couldn't bring people over. But when that non-solicit was done, I had followership and people said, can I come? And so this one individual, we were at a conference. He'd been relatively new, maybe 3 months in, and we are all, you know, the team is, you know, hanging out and just conversing and socializing. And somebody on the team said to him, "How's it going?" He's like, "Great. You know, it's going really well. Obviously, I worked with Mamta for years, but you know, people have been really surprised that I'm here, and I hear this, and I, you know, I'm standing right there, but I'm like, why? Why are they surprised that you're here?" Because the way I heard that was, why would somebody not come that has worked with for me for like, or, you know, 5 years already? Very logical. Like, do they think I don't have followership? That's how I heard. My ears heard that. And, you know, and, or do they think that he doesn't have the capacity? Like, those are where my head went. You know, my head went. He goes, "No, it's and he is a white male." And he said, "No." And he did this. And I'm like, I really didn't understand it. You know, I'm like, what does what does
What
this
do you
even
mean?
mean? I'm like, what? And fortunately, we have a really, you know, 5 years of working together. Like, I've seen him grow up and, you know, been to his wedding and, you know his family. And so I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, I really didn't understand it. You know, he's like, "Mantha, it's because I'm a white male." I'm like, wait, what? And this was like mind blowing to me. He's like, "Yeah, because you run the women's network and you're all about diversity and equity and inclusion, that people are surprised that you hired a white male." I'm like, what? Like, this was to me really, really shocking. And of course, he's being very blunt and authentic in, you know, and sharing that with me. I said, "You are my diversity. I literally on my team, because diversity is about diversity of thought, and it's about, and he was my diversity. Like, I had many other, you know, individuals on my team, and he brought a different mindset. I didn't have that many white males on my team, so, you know, if we're doing the buff, and quite honestly, I've never hired with that. I've hired for diversity of thought, regardless of where you come from."
Exactly that.
Yeah, and in fact, it stuck with me that I actually blogged about it. You know, on my LinkedIn, I had a post about messaging the diversity of thought because I thought it was so important. And you know what, Terry? I've posted a lot about a lot of, you know, different things, and that post till today is probably the most active post that I got on then on the number of text messages I got, one-on-one chats that I received, people calling me and saying, "I really appreciate you sharing that." So there is this undertone of that I wasn't even aware of, that where people want to hear more, that it's about diversity of thought and not about, you know, everything else that we say. And so, yeah, that was a learning moment for me, big
Yeah,
time.
interesting. And again, it leads back to the authenticity piece, right? In fact, I genuinely don't think my vision doesn't get me in that way. I'm actually really thinking about the team and what the makeup is. But obviously, from an outside perspective, sometimes you have to look at that too, and just don't know. People think about things in a different way, right? I think
Yeah,
it's
I agree. And thank goodness he was candid with me, right? So, you know, I think that's the other piece of when you're true and authentic with yourself and others, most of the time you get it back.
Yes.
And so, and that's really a feel good as well, right? You get it back. So it makes you a better person when it's a two-way conversation. And I'm using conversation loosely, because then you really can be, even for yourself, you know, because we're all about self-improvement. You know, what do I need to do to, that was a self-improvement moment. Even maybe, and others may say, well, no, it wasn't. It was just a comment by
Exactly.
someone. But there was definitely an undertone that I needed to improve on, that, or react to maybe, that helped me even more so, you know, than I ever would have thought.
Thank you for sharing. I wanted to just cover that because it was quite an interesting topic when you and I covered it previously. Just thinking, you've touched a little bit about mentorship, and people always ask me this, and I get asked this quite frequently. Do you seek out your mentors? Do you run mentoring groups within TP? Like, what does that look like? 'Cause I think sometimes women in particular are less confident when they're thinking about, okay, who am I who can I ask to mentor me and why would they want to do it? And so it's just nice just to share a little bit around that if you don't mind.
Yeah, it's a very, very important part generally for if I can give advice on this podcast is to be a mentor and have a mentor. And we do have programs at, not only within the TP Women, but also for the company TP overall as well, which I participated on. You know, I do proactively look for mentors. So I proactively said, I would love you to be my mentor, and have kept mentors in my, you know, as my mentor for over 20 years now, that they are there for me from a guidance, from a friendship, from a real, you know, they've seen me grow up, real deal perspective. And also they've grown up. So learning from them along the way is a big part of my success and the mentors I've had. I'm also a mentor. So for the mentees I've had, I owe it to pay it forward and also learn from my mentors, who, by the way, have been both men and women, and I pay it forward, who also my mentees have been men and women. I think that's super important to do as well, because you learn. One of my most recent mentees, I've learned so much from her. And she'll say, no, I learned more from you. And I'm like, no, you also bring sometimes the questions you bring and the vantage point you bring into the conversation helps me get to reflect and respond and guide you. So I think, again, you know, look at those relationships as my recommendation is don't look at them as transactional, like, oh, it's time for that call. So, but rather the conversation and how, where that leads, because over time that relationship becomes a friendship if it isn't from the start. And you may not be calling them a mentor anymore. You're calling them, or vice versa, a mentee. You're calling them a confidant, a friend. And that's true success, you know, along the way. They're people that I would be in touch with regardless of when I retire, they're still going to be my mentors.
Yeah. I don't know if you see what's happening here, but that's also you being authentic, right? It's you saying, I'm going to have genuine conversations with people rather than kind of going in tunnel vision, thinking I have to get something out of this, which again, I think is a testament to you and true to your core values. It seems to just kind of come through. And we are sadly slowly running out of time. So just a couple of questions around kind of future legacy, which is something that we always cover on the podcast. But what do you... If you had one piece of advice in thinking about your children, obviously you've got a son and a daughter, as you've mentioned, but what's the future advice for them in terms of like coming into the workplace?
Yeah, I am so excited, naturally, selfishly too, because I have a son and daughter in that generation, but also for the millennials as well. So, you know, the generations coming after me, because I'm a Gen Xer, the advice I'd give them is be respectful to yourself and to those around you. Be proud of yourself and those around you, and learn along the way. Like, learning never stops. And it goes back to being respectful and confident as well. So that would be my overarching advice is, you know, if you have those tenets, then the default is being true to yourself, right? And if you're true to yourself, and you know, and also at times sometimes you'll be in a job, especially early on in your career, but that may not seem like the ideal job, but you may learn from that. So remember the tenet of learning, because that learning is what you'll take forward, because you learn from good and bad, right? You learn from good and bad leadership as well. So patience and good listening is also part of that I didn't cover earlier, but I'm a avid listener. I learn by listening. More than anything, you know, everybody has their strengths. Mine is listen. I hardly take notes. I listen, because if you care and you're passionate about what you're doing, you actually remember you'll hear. And so that's my advice, is to do something you're passionate about. And if you do it with those tenets underneath, you can conquer the world. And, you know, and I'm confident that they will.
Thank you, Mansa. So, so happy that you've joined us today and for sharing. And I think both you and your two children are going to go on and conquer the world by the sounds of things. So I look forward to seeing that into the future. But thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much. And I say the same for you, Terry. Thank you for having me. I so appreciate you.
Of course. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.